Good afternoon, everybody. This meeting is called to order. Before proceeding with any business, I bet I'm rushing Mr. Cook over there, sorry. No, that's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the Office of Secretary of State as required by Chapter 551 of the Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I would like for that fact to be noted in the official record of this meeting. For the audience here today, I'd like to go over right quickly just some basic ground rules that I would request that you assist us in getting through the meeting. As you see, we've got a good turnout, and we like that and appreciate that. And if you'll help me by following these rules, I would be appreciative. An individual wishing to speak before the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission must first fill out and sign a speaker registration form, which is available out here at the table. The chairman is in charge of this meeting, and by law, it is his duty to preserve order, direct the order of the hearing, and recognize persons to be heard. We have sign-up forms for everyone wishing to speak, and the chairman will call names from those forms one at a time. Each person will be allowed to speak from the podium here up front one at a time. When your name is called, please come to the podium, state your name and whom you represent, if anyone other than yourself. And we'll also, the chairman will probably call an on-deck person, you know, who's ever coming up next, be ready. Then tell us which issue or issues you want to talk about, state your position on the issue, add supporting facts that will help the commission understand your concerns. Please limit your remarks to issues within the jurisdiction of the commission. Each person who wants to address the commission will have 3 minutes to speak. I will keep track of that time using a little stoplight device that we have here. This thing goes from green to orange with about 30 seconds left and red when your 3 minutes is up and you've got the same little lights and buttons on the podium there. So if we ask questions at the commission, if you get into a discussion, it will be counted against your time, but just to kind of help move the meeting along, we will follow that time limit, please. Statements that are merely argumentative or critical of others will not be tolerated. There is a microphone at the podium, so it is not necessary to raise your voice. I request that you show proper respect for the commissioners, as well as the other members of the audience. You will not be recognized out of turn by raising your hand or interrupting others. Disruptive or offensive behavior will be grounds for immediate ejection from the meeting and possible arrest and criminal prosecution. I respectfully request that you silence or turn off your cell phone and pager so you will not disrupt the meeting or those speaking. If you want to submit written materials to the commission, please give them to Carol Henby or Michelle Klaus here on my right, and they will pass those materials to the commission. Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Bob. First, I'd just quickly like to introduce, we have three new commissioners, Karen Hickson, Margaret Martin, and Dr. Antonio Falcone. Welcome. Welcome to the commission. And also, we have Representative Charlie Guerin here. Charlie, would you like to say a couple of words? You're a great supporter of Texas Parks and Wildlife.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and thank you for your service to the state. If you don't mind, I'd like to take just a half minute to, I know this is Mr. Cook's last meeting, and I just want to thank him for his incredible service to the state of Texas, his friendship, his service to, and his, he's been through some pretty tough sessions in front of the legislature, and he's always maintained the highest regard for the legislature, but he's represented this agency well over the 31 years he served it, and I want to thank him for his service, and that's really the reason I'm here today, but thank y'all very much for allowing me to speak.
Charlie, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Yeah, you guys are a little rough on him over there, I notice, every once in a while.
I try not to be, sir, but if it weren't for Bob, I don't believe we'd be having the Eagle Mountain Park opening next year to the public, and thank y'all for your help on that, and we're very excited about it.
Well, thank you for being a big part of that and taking the lead on it, because that's the kind of precedent we want to set, hopefully, going forward, that there's those opportunities for communities and urban areas particularly. So, thanks, Charlie.
Thank y'all. Thank you for your time
today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, well, why don't we get started? David Braun is up first, and Renea Hicks will be on call.
Thank you, Mr. Holt. I appreciate it. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And I also want to welcome the new commissioners and look forward to working with all of you. And my thanks to Bob Cook for many years of great service and the opportunity to work with you. My name again is David Braun. I own a law firm that does nothing but represent the owners of rural land. We have four lawyers who help landowners all over the state who are conservation-minded landowners. I also own Plateau Land and Wildlife Consulting. I'm too tall, sorry. And Plateau is an ecological consulting company. We have about 1,500 landowners that own 400,000 acres of conservation land in Texas, and all we do is help private landowners be better stewards of their land. I'm here today to talk about the Texas Teeming with Wildlife Coalition. About a year and a half ago, Bob asked me to set up a new coalition to support wildlife funding for the agency. And so I dove into this project and found out that we are one of the few states that didn't have a nonprofit arm that was out lobbying for support of the agency. So we formed the Texas Wildlife, the Teeming with Wildlife Coalition in Texas, and we're affiliated with the National Teeming with Wildlife Coalition. There's a little paper on the front of your handout that describes the Teeming with Wildlife Coalition. We're also affiliated with the International Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. And our group has grown very rapidly. In just 18 months, we have a list of almost 100 organizations, from sportsmen's groups to wildlife conservation groups to tourism organizations, anyone in the state that benefits from our wildlife. And we're finding people across the state all very receptive to joining the coalition and supporting Parks and Wildlife programs. Now, our first priority was to secure funding for the state wildlife grants. I won't go into a lot of detail. There's a four-page handout at the end of your packet about the state wildlife grants. Basically, it's a program funded with federal dollars to support a wildlife plan, implementing the state wildlife plan here in Texas. And the staff has done a marvelous job putting together the state wildlife plan. And for the last 2 years, we've secured about $3.5 million each year to fund the implementation of the plan. That's free federal dollars coming to support the agency. We think we can do much better, and we're going to keep growing and expanding that. But the State Wildlife Grants Program is the only program in the state that targets non-game and non-endangered species. And the effort is to keep animals off the endangered species list, address their problems before they get in trouble. So this is a proactive program. It stresses people using wildlife, appreciating wildlife, and the economic benefits that go with wildlife. So for 2 years, we've taken a group to Congress. We've met with every member of the Texas delegation. And we've begun to build a support base there in Congress. In the future, we're going to grow the coalition. We hope to have many hundreds of groups supporting the agency. And we want to support all kinds of funding, both state and federal, for wildlife programs. Thank you very much.
David, thank you. Any questions for David? David, thank you for staying so active. Appreciate it because of conservation. Thank you. Renee Hicks. Renee? Am I saying that correct?
Yes, you are.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay.
My parents didn't know how to spell, so this stuck.
And up to be Dwayne Holland.
I am Renee Hicks. I'm an attorney here in Austin. I've got a handout that I'm asking you to pass along to you that might help orient you. This is a matter. I'm here on behalf of John Borshin. He is a rancher, owns about somewhere around 22,000-acre ranch out in Presidio County, not too far from the northwestern neck of the Big Bighorn Ranch State Park. And I'm here to talk about a public roads issue that y'all are probably going to hear about. Your staff is quite aware of it, I believe. that I want to just introduce you to, and I just want you to take away, in case that red light comes on and David ate up any of my time, I just want you to take away from this that the main point I have for you today is don't rush to judgment. There's a lot to think about here that we think hasn't been thought about yet. Now let me orient you a little bit. First of all, I want to say Mr. Borshig supports public access to this particular neck of the Big Bend Ranch State Park. What you're seeing there on the map in the front is the northwestern edge of the park. And if you see a little dotted line there, that is Mr. Borshig's ranch. In between his ranch and the park is property owned primarily by Mr. John Poindexter, who has a big resort facility out there. We think that enough attention has not been given to the possible alternatives to the one your staff has begun to focus on. If you look at the red line there, those are the current public roads. By the way, the top end is the north end. Those are the current public roads into the park. The blue line that you see up near the top is the one that cuts across Mr. Borshig's land. That cuts it in half. It is the one that the staff of your agency is recommending right now. It would require Mr. Borshig to reorient everything on his ranch, his fences, pastures, watering facilities, hunting facilities. Everything would have to be redone. I'm sorry for talking so fast, but I want to make sure I get my time in. This same road has been the subject of a lawsuit battle between Mr. Poindexter and Mr. Borshig for several years. I think it's supposed to go to trial. I'm not representing him in that matter, but I think it's supposed to go to trial sometime in the fall. This whole issue is complicated by that lawsuit, and in fact, it's sticking the agency in a way that I don't think is too comfortable for anybody in that. The yellow line, very important, is called the Sublio Creek Road. It is the road that comes out of what's called the ghost town of Shafter. It has not been evaluated very much yet. We have looked at it. It makes some sense to look at. It might be a teeny bit more expensive, but it has better access. I've been on that road. It is not... unlike Mr. Borshig's ranch, which is not maintained and hadn't been maintained by the county since 1986 and never has been public, this one, even though it isn't a public road at this point, is maintained by the county. There's a purple line there that you see in the middle. That's entirely inside the park and would have access. It is more expensive. It's more complicated, but also would avoid any condemnation. Your agency, as you'll see in the attachment that's highlighted, has a policy against condemnation. At this point, essentially, the agency is supporting by proxy condemnation at the county level. Our basic point is, please take a chance, take a step to evaluate this, take a deep breath, and let everybody look at the alternatives more. This is going to be around for a while, and there's time to look at it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hicks. I'm somewhat aware of it, new chairman getting involved, but and I think right now, you use the term proxy, I just want to be a little careful. The county is the one that's very involved in this, and obviously we have interest, certainly, but right now I think it's more of a county issue, at least from our point of view.
Right. My only point was the staff had expressly written a letter supporting the condemnation efforts of the county. Thank you.
Thank you.
One question.
Any other questions, sir?
The star, is that Shafter?
Yes.
Okay. That's
Shafter.
Thank you. Dwayne Holland and Kirby Brown up next after Dwayne.
Thank you very much. I'm Dwayne Holland with the Texas Sea Grant Program, part of Texas A&M University. I'm here as a representative of the Clean Texas Marina and the Clean Texas Boater Program, a statewide program. And I'm here basically to introduce you to a partnership that's been formed between Texas Parks and Wildlife and the Texas Sea Grant Program to carry out clean boater environmental education efforts and under this Clean Texas Boater Program. And clean boating is good for Texas waters, and Texans like boating and marine recreation on clean coastal and inland waters. Protecting and preserving clean Texas waterways and maintaining water quality is up to each of us. And by adopting and teaching pollution prevention measures, the Clean Texas boater can take advantage and take satisfaction in knowing they are doing their part to preserve the Clean Texas waterways. The Clean Texas Boater Program, recognizing boaters participating with clean marinas for doing their part in keeping Texas waterways clean. We have about 5,000 pledges already in this program. The Clean Clean Voter Program is the most important part of our environmental education effort carried out by a joint project between Texas Parks and Wildlife, Texas Sea Grant, the Marina Association of Texas. And these programs are voluntary, and each provides participants with resources needed to minimize pollution in Texas waterways. The voters participating in the program receive a Clean Voter sticker, which they can put on their boat, which recognizes them for the efforts that they're doing. It also provides guidelines in the program that can ensure that the pollution prevention measures are carried out by the boater and the passengers in the boat. The goal of the program is to prevent pollution by making marinas, boat yards, and boaters more aware of environmental laws, rules, and jurisdictions, and encouraging marinas following best management practices to be designated and certified as Clean Texas Marinas. We have over 350 marinas, and the packet I've given you has documentation on a lot of the resources of those people, and we have about a third of those already signed up and part of the certification process. Texas Parks and Wildlife has been crucial to the success of funding grants to the Clean Vessel Act to create many of these educational materials. I brought some signs and things, but I thought they were too big to bring in here, so I didn't bring them in. But I'd like to thank the commission and the agency, and particularly Andy Goldblum, who's managed the Boating Access Program for Parks and Wildlife for a number of years, for continued support of the program. Thank you very much.
Dwayne, thank you for your work. Another place focusing on that. Kirby Brown and Jim Hare after Kirby.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, thank you very much for allowing me to be here. My name is Kirby Brown. I'm with Texas Wildlife Association, and for those of you who don't know us, TWA is a wildlife conservation organization whose members are made up of landowners, wildlife managers, hunters, and conservationists that own or control over 35 million acres of land in Texas. We want to congratulate you and Mr. Holt, particularly, and the new commissioners. Congratulations for coming on. We're delighted to see you and looking forward to working with all of you. Good luck, Mr. Chairman. Also, I want to thank you on behalf of TWA, not only the commissioners that are here, but past commissioners, for your continued effort at looking at and overseeing the efforts that are made by this department in wildlife management on private lands and hunting and our hunting heritage, and particularly with youth hunting programs, and also just overseeing a staff that's probably the most outstanding staff of biologists and professionals anywhere in North America. And I had the opportunity to work here 25 years before I went to TWA 5 years ago, and I'll assure you, it is an outstanding group, and I've met all the others, and there's none better. Also, I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and former Chairman Fitzsimmons, for your intense and tireless efforts at the Capitol on behalf of all of us and all of our issues, because I know how long you were down there and the days you had to make for it. Even during parts of the playoffs, and that was really good to see. So
that was a sacrifice.
That was a sacrifice. There is no question.
For the right reasons.
I also wear another hat as chairman of the Texas Outdoor Partners, a loose coalition of hunting and fishing and conservation organizations in Texas that formed this year. It turned out to be a pretty effective partnership. There are about 45 organizations that are part of that. Each person chooses to sign on or not. It is a loose coalition, and it's worked very well in bringing all of our issues to the legislature and really having them understand what our concerns are. And so we were proud to be a part of that and proud to help with Fund 9 getting on track, the state park funding, the hatcheries getting funded, and Rider 27 providing flexibility, some of the things that we worked on. And we look forward to working with you in the future through that partnership. We think that's a great group. And finally, I can't leave without thanking my good friend and executive director, Bob Cook, who I had the privilege to work with for many years. And under his leadership, the wildlife field in Texas has absolutely flourished, and the department has done a tremendous job. And for Kirby, all of us.
I'm going to give you a few more minutes.
Yeah, okay, okay, Bob. I just... Well, I'll cut this off real fast, then.
Thank you, Kirby.
No, all of us at TWA, Bob, as you know, and everyone in the sporting and conservation community, just we're going to miss you. We're going to miss your leadership. Thank you so much for what you've done.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you, folks. Thank you.
Thank you, Kirby. And every time Joe and I were walking the halls, would there be Kirby with us? He was a huge help on the park side, and that's the beauty of what I think this department has done, is pulled together conservation, parks, hunting interests, and everybody's focusing on one thing, and that's conserving Texas and doing the best we can to serve our constituents. And Kirby's a big part of that. Jim Hare and then Devin Hernandez, and I think a group of people in the Texas Youth Program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members. Yes, sir.
I'm Jim Hare from Tyler. I'm a lifelong Texas fisherman, boater, and hunter. I appreciate the chance to discuss Anheuser Busch's involvement in the department's safe boating efforts. I'm not anti-alcohol, by the way. The department adopted LCRA's safe boating program this summer, but made two unacceptable changes. First, the department featured an Anheuser-Busch idea that you can safely drink and boat by using a designated driver. However, this strategy actually increases the risk of death and injury, according to the Coast Guard, Johns Hopkins University, University of North Carolina, and the state of California, who reports that over half of their alcohol-related boating fatalities are intoxicated passengers, most of which contribute to or cause their own deaths. I recently provided you with that documentation. The department next added an Anheuser-Busch-sponsored singer as a celebrity spokesman whose biggest hit song is about getting drunk before going fishing. The Coast Guard told the department they would not be associated with that person. All of this appears to be part of a pattern of Anheuser-Busch exerting its political influence over the department at the public's expense. 10 examples of this are attached. Another voting safety and beer problem at the department is the use of the state share locker program for the extensive promotion of Budweiser beer among boaters, while the department remains silent on boating injuries and deaths. The department's decision not to report on boat crashes on our lakes may result from a previous safe boating skit featuring a drunk boater with slurred speech. Anheuser-Busch became very upset, saying this was insensitive to their beer customers. They flew down to Austin and became part of the department's safe boating process. If slurred speech in a skit could upset Anheuser-Busch beer customers this much, the department would know not to report on actual alcohol injuries and deaths. Such reports could also lead people to ask why the department is promoting beer in the first place, and that would also upset Anheuser-Busch. For example, the department repeated the Budweiser beer name 22 times in a May 14th press release, but 12 days later, the department was silent when a 16-year-old Lufkin girl lost a leg to a drunk boater. The most extreme example of the department suppressing bad alcohol news was some years back, pardon me, when the department kept Dallas boaters in the dark about the alcohol danger on Cedar Creek Lake. There were 3 alcohol deaths on one weekend, including a 6-year-old girl, and 3 separate boat crashes. The next week, the department churned out its regular batch of press releases, but was silent on the 3 alcohol deaths. To sum up, the department's new safe boating message clearly increases the risk of death and injury to the public. All of this, along with the pattern of this alcohol marketer's influence over the department, shows it's in the public interest to get the department separated from the beer business. Thanks very much. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the commission? As chairman, I'll look into this. I mean, I'm not as aware, obviously, as maybe others may be. So, Jim,
yeah, and let me say this. If you talk to someone with the commission, with the department, there's arguments both ways. I just want to say I have a ton of documentation on everything that's been said here. This is not some I hate alcohol deal. This is hard stuff. If you don't like what you see, I hope you get involved in it.
Fair enough. Thank you, Jim. Looks like we have a group of people representing Texas Youth Hunting Program. Devin Hernandez up, and then Brandon Hernandez. I don't know if you all want to come together or separately. Nathan Tinsley after that.
My name is Devin Hernandez. I was able to go on the youth hunt last year, and I had a great time. Yes, sir. I got to hunt on the Otner's Ranch, and I got my first deer. We learned how to clean the deer, and we also learned how to tell the age of the deer by its teeth. This hunt was a learning experience for me. I wanted to thank the Texas Parks and Wildlife and the youth hunting program for the opportunity to participate in this hunt. I think it is that this is a great program, and I hope it continues to give other kids like me a chance to hunt and experience the outdoors. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. It's too bad our former chairman, Joe Fitzsimmons, isn't here, and also another chair, Commissioner Donato Ramos. They were two that were very much focused on youth hunting, and, of course, it's something that the department's focused on, and I can assure you this commission's focused on. Yes, sir. Brandon Hernet?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Brandon.
My name is Brandon. This past year I got to do the Texas youth hunt, and, you know, I really enjoyed it. I got to spend time with my father and mother and my little brother, and we got to go through the Otmer's Ranch, and I got two deer this year through their program. Like my little brother was saying, they got to teach the kids how to clean the deer, how to tell if aging, what was legal, what wasn't legal, proper hunting tips, all that good stuff. And I think it's really cool that Texas Parks and Wildlife and the Youth Association does things like this, because it keeps families close, and also it teaches kids good habits towards parks and wildlife. And I'm here today to say thank you all.
Well, thank you. Any questions for Brandon? All right, Brandon, thank you very much. Thank you for bringing up the family. Nathan Tinsley?
Good afternoon. My name is Nathan Tinsley, and I'm 13 years old. I'm from the Houston area where I live with my mom, who is a single parent. I got involved 2.5 years ago when I was asked if I wanted to go on a deer hunt. That particular time, I knew nothing about the outdoors or hunting. The word hunting was not even in my vocabulary. I was invited to the Weight Watchers Ranch by Houston area huntmaster, Mr. John Miller. On my first trip, I harvested a deer. That was the first shot I ever made, and I was really excited to make that shot. The landowner, Mr. Wade Watkins, was in the blind with me when I hit the deer. Still can't believe I hit the shot. That whole weekend was a whole new experience for me. I learned how to clean the deer and what to do with it afterwards, because I really liked the deer sausage my grandma made for breakfast. Since that experience, I've been on another deer hunt, a waterfowl hunt, and a dove hunt. Then 2 months ago, Mr. CG, he took us to a double H ranch in New Mexico to help restore wildlife in its natural habitat. I would like to thank all the landowners who gave us, the youth, the dream. A special thanks to TWA and TYHP and the hunt masters and the volunteers who have made an impact in my life and educated youth from the concrete streets of Houston. And a special thanks to Mr. Bob Cook, who started the youth hunt, and hope you have a happy retirement. Thank you.
Sarah Coffey, and after Sarah, it looks like Colin Graff. Colin or Colin Graff.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Coffey, and I'm here representing the Texas Brigade today. This summer, I attended the South Texas Buckskin Brigade. I've been involved with the program since last summer, when I attended the South Texas Bob White Brigade. And I can tell you this, that it's an amazing program, and I've never been involved in anything like it before. When I first went to my first camp last summer, I had no idea what to expect. I thought it was going to be like any other camp I'd ever attended. I'd go there, have a fun week, and then I'd return home and go on with my normal life. Boy, was I wrong. This program has completely changed my life. Throughout the camp, we learned not only about wildlife management and conservation practices, but we also were constantly gaining leadership skills. I don't come from a hunting background, so it was completely unfamiliar with me. Of course, I enjoyed the outdoors and wildlife, but the Texas Brigade completely opened my eyes to a new world, and I was constantly gaining knowledge and information the entire week. But in addition to this, the Texas Brigade have given me two very important aspects, passion and inspiration. They're not something that I can learn in any book or see on any Animal Planet TV shows. For inspiration, all the instructors at the Texas Brigades have helped me to go on a new career path, and I'm currently trying to pursue a career in soil and crop sciences when I graduate from high school this next year. As for passion, the Texas Brigades is something I hold very dear to my heart. I'm not a native Texan. I was born and raised in Tennessee, and I lived there for 16 years. When I moved here, it wasn't an easy change. Living in a place for that long, you kind of get attached to it. But after going to the Texas Brigades, my life was completely changed, and I realized that the move here was worthwhile. If my parents told me today that we were going to move back to Tennessee, that I could go back to my old school, hang out with my old friends, I don't think I could leave, because the Texas Brigades has given me something here that I haven't found anywhere else. I'd personally like to thank Texas Parks and Wildlife for their support of this program and for providing some amazing instructors throughout the camp. Two of these I'd like to mention is Ashton Hutchins and Jimmy Rutledge. They have completely helped change my life, and I truly appreciate what they've done for me and youth everywhere over Texas. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Any questions for Sarah? We're going to have to sign you up. You're well-spoken. Well, everybody is. I'm impressed, and I'm glad you're in Texas. Don't go back to Tennessee. All right. Thank you. Colin Graff.
Sorry, I was there. I'm Colin Graff, and I went to the South Texas Bobwhite Brigade, and I have to thank Sarah Coffey as one of my great assistant cubby leaders, and Chancey McGuss, another good, he was my cubby leader. They taught me there a lot about importance of habitat and habitat conservation. It's very important to have a good habitat for your quail, and it's very important because you wouldn't want to go to a job somewhere where there was not any homes to live, because you didn't have a place to live. So they taught us how to improve habitat and all the things that were needed in habitat, such as your grasses and your forbs and your woody plants, their protection and their nesting cover and things such as that. My camp experience was great. I enjoyed it. I had some great, jolly instructors, and Sarah Coffey and Chancey Lewis were also very nice and very helpful. They were very good, had great food, and of course the peach cobbler was the best. Had a lot of fun. That was really, really good. I have to thank Mr. Gray for that. Very good cook. And it was a great experience, had a lot of fun, and I want to thank you for your support of brigades, and I can't wait to go back next year as an assistant cubby leader. Thanks so much.
Wonderful. Thank you. Any questions for Colin? That's kind of last of the youth group. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
And enjoy next year, and try to get some of your buddies to go with you, because the
I
more
will.
People we can get involved, the better.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you to all of the group, the youth group, and TWA, and everybody else involved in this, because this is one of our goals, of course, is to get youth involved, and then we'll recruit them and get them to Texas Parks and Wildlife. That will be in good shape for the future. With that, we have a new group coming up. I think I'm going to announce this, Walter Scheel or Shelley. And then Chris Ramsey after that, and then Bill Puszczowski.
Distinguished ladies and gentlemen, my name is Walter Shelley, and I'm a concerned fisherman. I'm concerned about the pressure being put on our inland bays in Matagorda County and even the whole Texas Gulf Coast, and I hope you will help me do something about it. After changes in the fishing regulations for redfish, they are doing great. The flounder population is also in decline because of the programs instituted by the Texas Parks and Wildlife. Let us now take a further step now to protect our speckled trout population. Decline. Over the last 5 to 10 years, I've seen numbers of speckled trout decline at the cleaning tables. I know that y'all's surveys do not show this, but I see them for eye contact, that you don't bring in limits of trout like you used to. Especially on our bays, like in East and West Matagorda Bay, especially East Matagorda Bay, which is landlocked. I figure the reason for this decline, the population of fishermen in Texas is growing in leaps and bounds. Yes, this is good for our economy for the short term, but for the same reason, it is will hurt the speckled trout population in the long term. By itself, the increase in the number of Texas fishermen in the future would put more and more pressure on our inland bays unless we make changes in fishing regulations now to prevent it. Experts say that the population in Texas may double in the next 10 years. This could double the number of fishermen crowding our bays. Okay, the use of bait. There are mainly three types of bait that are used: artificial, live shrimp, and live croaker. Artificial baits and live shrimp have been used almost exclusively until a few years ago, fishermen who used croaker as baits. However, are relatively new to Matagorda Bay system, especially East Matagorda Bay. You can catch speckled trout with croaker when you cannot catch them with anything else. This is because, my belief, croakers make a croaking sound which attracts the trout and make them attack aggressively. More egg-producing trout are being caught because of the croaker fishermen, and the number of fishermen is increasing by leaps and bounds. Our bay systems cannot take this kind of pressure. I would like to see new regulations implemented on our trout population from dwindling, of course, the Texas Parks and Wildlife make the decision. Make croaker a game fish. Put an 8-inch size on croaker being sold as bait. Do not allow croaker fishing in the months of most trout are spawned, June, July, and August. Increase the size limit on trout to 16 inches. Reduce bag limits if necessary, and catch and release a big trout. My summary is, the bay systems, including our Matagorda system, will be put under extreme pressure because I have brought to you today. East Bay will be affected by most of this. It is only 3.5 miles by 16 wide and only has one main inlet, and the water exchange there is very slow. The Texas Parks and Wildlife, I think, need to take studies on croaker fishing to see what effects that they're having. I mean, we see this, that there is a decline in the amount of fish being brought in. And I'm not looking at today, I'm looking at years down the road for the main effect, what we'll have if something is not done now, because Lower Laguna Madre, they have, y'all have implemented a 5-fish limit. And I don't want to see that happen in our area, so maybe if something can be done now before this actually, you know, gets bad enough to do this. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Excuse me, I didn't. Okay. Chris Ramsey, up next. Chris Ramsey, and up next is Bill Puszkowski.
Chairman, new commissioners, thank y'all. I'm not going to reiterate everything that Mr. Shelley said, but I'm here in reference to East Matagorda Bay and a little bit of background for those of you who don't know. One of our smallest bay systems. It's virtually landlocked, and we all know about the population these days. You drive anywhere and look at all the for sale signs. Well, I'm not here. I have no vested monetary interest in this bay. I'm just very passionate about Texas and its resources, and I'm here to prompt Texas Parks and Wildlife, who I'm currently very satisfied with, to be proactive in preserving this fishing for even for some of these younger people who spoke so well earlier. Croaker are devastating the big trout. For those of you who don't know, trout possess no natural defense against them. Unlike a deer where it has eyes and ears, trout eat croaker no matter how close to the boat they are or who's on the end of the line or how skilled you are. So with the Texas's population increasing at increasing rates, better fishermen, more educated, it only makes sense that we look at this topic. Whereas the bag limits are what we're using to retain these fish with. In closing, there was a time when we could shoot ducks off a pond before they got in the air, and used to be able to spotlight deer. And it's found to be unsportsmanlike. And this is a game fish, it's a sport, and I want to be here for my friends, children, mine, and all of us for years to come, because I love it. Once again, thank y'all for all the vast and rewarding opportunities Texas Parks and Wildlife has provided for me and my family. Thank y'all.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chris. Any questions? Okay. Bill?
Thank you.
No, excuse me. Next up is Park. Will be Park Smith after Bill.
My name is Bill Pustowski, and I am a fishing guide in Matagorda, Texas. I've been fishing all my life, from knee-high to a grasshopper. I've seen in the past couple of years a decline in our fisheries, especially in East Matagorda Bay. It's gotten real bad this year. We had a few young croaker guides come in. They caught a lot of big trout, threw them on the fish cleaning tables, put it all over the internet for the whole state of Texas to come down and throw croaker in little East Matagorda Bay. Well, it's not going to take long. It's going to end up like Fort Mansfield if something's not done. Now, I have talked to the Chamber of Commerce in Matagorda last week. I'm going to talk to all the commissioners probably next week and the Bay City Chamber of Commerce, and we'll be getting back with our people that we have down there, our biologists, and I'll be talking to Mr. McKinney. Our breeding fish are being taken out, and a lot of them were taken out this year. I don't know what our survey nets are going to say this fall when the biologists do their surveys, but I don't think it's going to be that good. Right now, the fishery, I think, as far as fish population, is still okay, but is a big decline on trout this long. I don't want East Bay or even West Matagorda Bay to get like Fort Mansfield, to where right now you catch trout this long or trout this long, and that's all you have. The breeding fish were taken out. It was one reason only. That was because the use of live croaker as bait. They're like throwing a stick of dynamite. Texas Forest Wildlife, I think, have managed our bays extremely well. They don't want to take a step on the croaker issue, is my view at this point. Might have to go to bag limits. I don't know what the answers are. I'm just here today to tell you that there is a problem. Management. I'm sure most of y'all own ranches. Give me 3 months on your ranches. Let me shoot 2 bucks a day. I'm going to kill every big buck on your property in those 3 months. Croaker fishermen do more damage in 3 months out of the year than I do all year long. I throw strictly artificial lures. Period. I don't know what the answer is, but there is a major problem there, and something needs to be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Wonderful. Okay. Park Smith is coming up, and then Jim West after Park Smith.
Bringing some folks with me in case I get jumped while
there you go.
Got backup.
Yeah, you have a lot of backup.
Hello, my name is Park Smith, and I'm the coordinator for American Youth Works Environmental Corps program. I'm proud to introduce to you these young people who are the future leaders of our country. These AmeriCorps members have signed up for a 6 month to 2 year term of service. They come from as close as Southeast Austin to as far away as Alaska and Montana from other Conservation Corps programs similar to ours. These folks are ages 17 to 27, and they've dedicated 6 months to 2 years of their lives to give service back to their country. This is in return for a living stipend and an educational award that can be used to attend trade school, go to college, or to pay off student loans that they may have already acquired. And I'm here to thank you guys for partnering with American Youth Works Environmental Corps, what we could call Texas Conservation Corps. Following in the tradition of youth in service that started by the Civil Marine Conservation Corps in the 1930s, our program is partnered with Texas Parks and Wildlife through the Recreation Trails program. We've done some fee-for-service contracts with you guys where our crews have built trails in 3 state parks this year. Huntsville State Park, where 24 of our members built over 600 feet of raised boardwalk trails. They did stonework for erosion control at bridge abutments under Chris Holmes, the superintendent out there. 600 feet of boardwalk is 2 football fields long, so pretty good deck out there in the trails that allows people to get access in the muddy times. Franklin Mountain State Park in the Wyler Tramway. We had 18 Corps members go there, and at the top of the mountain, they built an emergency escape route off of the tramway for times when the tramway breaks down and citizens get stuck up there. Besides that, they also built a new ridgeline access trail that gives folks an opportunity to get to the top of that mountain at Franklin Mountain and look over El Paso, Mexico, and New Mexico. Some great park staff out there, Ishmael Vela, who worked right beside our crews and did a tremendous job with them. He was with us every step of the way, climbing over the steepest sections of trail that we've ever worked, and many people in Texas probably have never worked. Lake Possum Kingdom, Fish Hatchery, River Access Trail. We just completed this project, and you'll see little write-ups on each of these projects in your packets there. 24 Corps members built a decomposed Grant Trail, complete with hand-carved stone that we field-gathered out there to replicate the stonework of the CCC. We've also worked on an in-kind donation basis where we've come in to, after storm damage was taking place in parks, and we just came in and volunteered the non-contract stuff where Inks Lake State Park had some storm damage and we're keeping visitors out of their park areas, and we removed some trees. Same thing at LBJ State Park, McKinney Falls State Park, we've been working at for years. We're going to lead a National Public Lands Day out there where we'll lead over 100 volunteers from the private and public sector in a volunteer event to improve the park, and we invite you out to that. There's an invitation in your packet. So thanks to the forward thinking of Parks Director Walt Dabney and leaders like Tim Hogstead over the Recreation Grants Branch and Andy Goldblum over the Recreation Trails Grants, we've been able to bring federal AmeriCorps dollars to match with federal trails dollars in with the state parks money. And by leveraging all those funds, we're giving these guys here an opportunity to learn about the state parks, to work with your park staff, to explore career ideas in this field of conservation and parks-related work. And, you know, these gung-ho folks are just doing tremendous things. They're out there sweating every day. They're in their dirty clothes because they came from a job site this morning where they were removing invasive species. And we just like to plant this seed with you that in the future you make history by continuing to support youth and conservation and service in Texas State Park. We thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you, Park. Do any of your crew want to say anything? Because we sure appreciate the work they've done for Texas Parks and Wildlife. I can tell you all those people that visit those parks really do appreciate it. Anybody like to say something?
Well, they're building top-notch trails.
Oh, I know they are. I can tell they've been working all morning. Yeah. We've been sitting here talking. They're working. Okay.
Yeah.
No, thank you very much, and thank each and every one of you for coming into Texas, for those of you who are not from Texas, and helping us and helping the people use those parks. So thank you. Thank you all. Thank you, Mark. Jim West is up next, and then Joe Turner after Jim.
Ladies, gentlemen, I'm inspired by the young people. I want to mention something beforehand before I get started on a couple of subjects. I went to Kansas back in 87 or 86, and I did a pheasant hunt. And where I went, they shut down the whole town. They started their season on a Friday. And even the kids, that next morning, there was about 7 school buses there at that town. And everybody went out to different directions and went hunting. And even the kids that weren't on that hunt were a part of that. Because they shut the school down, they shut everything down, and it's ironic to see these young people come up here and speak, and I think it's a great thing, and that just kind of popped in my mind, and I still remember that as it happened just last week when I went and I witnessed that. Two things: duck hunting season. The average duck hunter is in his 50s now. The majority of the hunters in the state of Texas are probably in their 30s. The majority of the hunters are deer hunting or dove hunting or quail hunting. Y'all started the duck hunting season the same day as deer hunting season for the last couple of years. The average deer hunter or the guy that spends the money, he is not going to go duck hunting because y'all start those seasons on the same date. That is really a wrong thing to do. I would recommend either having a 3-week split after Thanksgiving or have a 2 split that you've had in the past. It doesn't take a brain scientist to think if the guy's got his own lease and he's spending $2,000 or $3,000, he's not going to hunt the opening day of duck season. And it really does compete with the duck hunter or the average hunter who will spend money to go with an outfitter. I've been an outfitter and a guide all my life. I served on the sea trout committee with Hal Osborne about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And I will have to agree to a point of what Billy and the other guys had talked about. Hal always said at every meeting, we just want to tweak it a little bit to make a little change. Well, every bay system's different. Every bay system, the trout are not a migrator. And they don't really, you have an influx of fish, but they don't pull out of those bays. And maybe he needs a little bit of help there in Matagorda. We're in Galveston and down further south where we have other big openings where you have a big influx of fish. And those bays are definitely can sustain a lot more pressure. But the Sea Trout Committee was really, with Hal Osborne, was a great thing. And I believe that if there are any changes, that maybe the commission needs to take a look at that and implement where we can talk about that with a group of people instead of just making a change on their own. Thank you very much. Oh, any questions?
Thank you. Any questions or comments? All right. Thank you. Excuse me, Joe Turner up next, Joe. And after that, Beth McDonald.
Chairman, commissioners, my name is Joe Turner. I'm the Parks Director for the City of Houston. Approximately 1 year ago, this same time frame, Lake Houston State Park was transferred to the City of Houston, and I'd just like to give you a quick update where we are in that process. Last year, we projected a budget to operate that park at $358,000. This year's budget was approved at $436,000. We also have, for this year and for the next 2 years, we have a $100,000 grant from one of our prominent citizens in Houston who understood the need of operational dollars for us through this process that we're going through. We currently have a staff there at the park of 6 full-time people and 2 staff and 2 part-time. And we're moving forward, of course, with our partnership there along with Commissioner Ed Reinhart of Montgomery County, who we operate the park with. We established approximately 4 months ago a stakeholders group that will work, helping us to work for the master plan for that park. That stakeholder group has been worked with Catherine Nichols of the National Park Service, Rivers, Trails, and Conservation Assistant. She's our facilitator as we move through the process. This Friday, we will be releasing a request for qualifications for the master plan development for this park. We currently have it out there advertised. What we're really looking for is help to get it to those individuals who develop state parks and national parks. One of the criteria was not only have you designed a state park or a national park or worked in a national park or state park, has it actually been built? There's a lot of designs, but they never get built to help us move through the process. And this process, we've projected to be a 10-year project as we move, a 10-year program as we move through the development of this park. I'd like to thank Texas Parks and Wildlife. You, your staff, the staff here are our resource, particularly Scott Burroff, Walt Dabney, and Tim Hoxhead. We couldn't do it without them and the rest of the staff. The other steps we'll be moving through with the assistance of Texas Parks and Wildlife will be to establish a forest, a vegetation, and a wildlife management plan for this park as we go through the master planning process. Plan is to have most of this ready right after the first of the year so we can review that with Texas Parks and Wildlife. If you're not familiar, there are quite a few restrictions that both parties asked to put into this park so we maintain the integrity and the nature of this park. I'd like to tell you this summer, it was an amazing experience for us. We had over 500 kids from our urban park system up there this year on day camps. It was an experience for us. It was definitely an experience for most of them because they've never had the opportunity to be on nature tours, learning how to cast. Actually, we did a lot of nature games and scavenger hunts. And it's been a great process for us. The second one I'd like to give you is I'd like to thank everyone here for the results of the 80th legislative session. I think we all did good. We got to keep working. We did good, as my dad used to say, but we got to keep moving. And for not only for our state parks, but also our local state parks. And then I have one but you can click it. I have one presentation here from the Mayor Bill White. And Bob, if you would come here, I'd like to give it to you. The mayor just... I'll give it to him. And I'm only going to be a couple sentences. You know the story. I'm not going to read it all, but it says, whereas Robert L. Cook has devoted his entire career to the conservation for the betterment of the state since he graduated from Texas A&M in 1965, and his career with Texas Parks and Wildlife, and it goes through all the programs you did for us, worked so close with us on Lake Houston State Park. This paragraph here are all the grants that we have done with Texas Parks and Wildlife out of the Houston area, and they are many. City of Houston congratulates and commends Robert L. Cook on this wonderful day and extend his best wishes for a long and happy retirement. If you haven't read this month's Texas Parks and Wildlife, there's a term in there called Old Codger. And I want to sit on the porch with the Old Codger. Therefore, I, Bill White, Mayor of the City of Houston, hereby proclaim August 22nd, 2002 as Robert L. Cook Day in the City of Houston, Texas.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. I think that's another great example of Texas Parks and Wildlife working with these urban areas as we try to get more and more kids and youth involved in getting out of nature. So Joe's done a terrific job over there. Thanks, Joe. Beth, come on up.
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Beth McDonald. I am the president of Texans for State Parks. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. Also, thank you, Mr. Cook, for the invitation to come and speak my mind, which I've been known to do. Our love and best wishes go with you and your wife, and hope you enjoy your retirement and travels as much as Bill and I have. I come today representing a few hundred members of Texans for State Parks, as well as other park users everywhere. My message and request to you are the same that I made in the past few years to commissions chaired by Mr. Bass, Ms. Armstrong, and Mr. Fitzsimmons. Buy the land. As I stated in the beginning, the price of land is not going down near urban areas, and urban families will not have access to state parks unless a concentrated effort is made to provide access to them within a reasonable traveling distance from their homes. Please place land acquisition high on your priority list now that some funds are available for this purpose. You face the great challenge not of your making, and we all know that. There are many areas of repair, replacement, enrichment, and public education to challenge your attention and resources. We cannot fathom the effort this is going to take. Many state park friends groups are standing by, organized, ready, and willing to help. You have our support and our very best good wishes for a great term on the commission. May we all go forward in concert and harmony to right the many wrongs now facing our park system. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Beth, thank you very much, and thank you for all the help in this last legislature. I know it's a start, and there's a lot more to be done, but our goal is to get started, keep the momentum, and do exactly what you're talking about. Especially around the urban areas, no doubt about it.
Yes, and you know we have it to do again in two more years.
Oh, yes, every 2 years. That's right.
I'm afraid you'll do it without me. This last one exhausted me.
Well, I'm sorry, because you've been a great help and a wonderful, wonderful supporter. So thank you for everything you've done.
Yes.
Any questions or comments? All right. Next up, Will Kirkpatrick. And then after that, Charles either Schaffner or Schaffner.
Schaffner.
Okay, Will Kirkpatrick first. And then Charles Shaw.
My name is Wilkert Patrick. I live on Sam Rayburn. The rest of it's in your letter she's going to give you. The last 3.5 years involving our new freshwater fish hatchery has been very interesting, during which time I met with scores of interesting people, accumulated a wealth of information I'll probably never need again. But it's also been a huge disappointment to myself and other freshwater anglers. During a meeting in regards to this hatchery, which was held in Athens, Texas on August the 30th of 2004, we found there was unsound data being used by both Parks and Wildlife Foundation and the Parks and Wildlife Department's personnel in their site selection. We incorrectly assumed that if the accurate information was provided, these faulty ratings would be rescinded. It became obvious with the improper press release that Mr. Edwin Koch Jr. made on October the 14th that not only were the serious flaws in the overall hatchery site selection process, but in the criteria cited to justify the awarding. And hearing Mr. Cook's opening statement, we used only information that's available to the public. Should there be any question about the information that you've got there, our Attorney General can contact U.S. Fish and Wildlife in Arlington, Virginia. We've got the names and the phone numbers. Another point that we previously stated is that overall cost figures will prove incorrect. In our letter to you dated June the 20th, 2007, we provided information that the conveyance piping alone from Sam Rayburn to the hatchery for the Jasper location was going to be an additional $720,000 over that of St. Augustine. Your attachments 3 and 4 document another loss of approximately $600,000. All of this with the additional major costs previously pointed out to the foundation, the department staff, and yourself breaks the bond of trust we felt like we had with the freshwater anglers in the state of Texas. Anglers agreed to put up $60 million if the original promise of the best location was adhered to. We know this is not going to be the case now. The following statement covers pages 3 and 4 in your book. I thank you for the time. It's been 3.5 years, and it's been pretty disappointing. But it's been very interesting. Thank you.
Any questions for Will? Thank you, Will. Okay, next up is Charles Schaffner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners Ford. Mr. Parker, I'd like to say hello to you, too, personally, sir. How are you? I'm Charles Schaffner. I'm Jasper County Commissioner. Commissioner Stark accompanied me today. We came to bring you more or less a progress report on the new fish hatchery, East Texas Fish Hatchery, located in Jasper County. We've basically got all the land site prep where all the ponds would go. We've got them cleaned. The right-of-ways are all signed. Our contracts are with the temple and the core are all in good shape. State has done their part. We're doing our part. We're in the process right now of doing the right-of-way. You can almost see the creek now, Mr. Parker, from where we hit the groundbreaking ceremonies. So we're just moving forward. We came today to make a presentation to you folks, and we appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Parker. Anything you have to say? Go, 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 huh? Yes. Thank you very much for taking the time and effort to come down, and thank you for all your support.
Yes, sir.
I think some dollars now have been allotted coming out of the 80th legislature, and we'll get some groundbreaking going, actually start building the building. So that's our goal.
Good.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Next up, Thomas Hall, and after that, Steve Holzhauser, I think I'm pronouncing right. Thomas Hall? Steve Holzhauser, or I think I'm pronouncing it. Steve? Yeah.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Steve Holzhauser. As a point of introduction, I had the privilege from the mid-80s to the late 90s to serve in the Texas House of Representatives representing the mid-coastal area, which is the topic that I want to talk to you about. One of the counties that I had was Calhoun County. My parents started out visiting that area for sport fishing back in the mid-60s. I had the benefit of that experience, and we've had some land there that we've got a house on from that time to the present. When I first started going there, the access to the waterways was unlimited. You could go to any point that you wanted to where you were had access to the water, put your boat in. There was plenty spaces for you to park, and you had very little traffic in that area. Now, the public use of that area has gone up so much that if you go down there on any Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, and you get to a public boat ramp that's owned by Texas Parks and Wildlife, or they're involved in some way, you are not going to find a place to park in Port O'Connor, Texas. After the small parking area that is there is filled up, people start parking on the public roadway, which causes a very congested and very dangerous situation. So I thought, well, I need to find out if I can help find some way to increase the public's access to this public use of this part of the water. So I started checking with the people at Parks and Wildlife, and basically what I found out was that very little is known about the public boat ramps that the state operates. Originally, Texas Department of Transportation built those facilities, but in the mid-70s, whenever Parks and Wildlife got the registration fees, of course, the responsibility for those docks went to Parks and Wildlife. When I started asking about some kind of a categorization of where they are, who uses them, how much use is there, who maintains them, what is the projection for future use? Are you going to build more docks? Who's doing the maintenance? And the answer was that there isn't anybody in Parks and Wildlife that has that responsibility. You have some people that actually look for grants, and you match some monies with some local entities like cities and counties, but when you go from Galveston all the way down to Corpus Christi, besides Freeport, that whole area is pretty rural. You're going to be dealing with county commissioners mainly, and in some areas where you have funding coming from the state, those county commissioners are able to do some things that will provide access for the public. But for the most part, they're going to be dependent upon what Parks and Wildlife can do. And my suggestion is that you try to find some way to organize the use of your Parks and Wildlife assets and the federal assets that are available for y'all in order to maintain these facilities. There are some people that live on the intercoastal waterway or have access to the water itself, but the vast majority of the people on the coast don't. I figured up about $35 million coming from boat registrations, titles, motor fuels taxes, and things like that. Of course, a lot of that is going to be used inland, but a lot of it is for the coast. Now, my time has run out. I just say tomorrow, whenever you have the six proposals that are brought to you and asking you to help fund, you're going to be able to fund one of those that comes from the cities and the counties. And that's what the federal monies that y'all are spending are able to accomplish at this time. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to entertain them.
Thank you, Steve. Any questions for Steve? I wrote myself a couple of things. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time.
Judy Ron Carson, I'm not going to run. Okay. And after that will be Janice Anderson.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Judy Roncarts. I have been a resident of Texas for 27 years and an outdoor enthusiast. I am also the current president of the Austin Ridge Riders Mountain Bike Club and represent the mountain biking community. Our all-volunteer club promotes safe and responsible mountain biking in and around the Austin area. We are active in building and maintaining trails, and we also partner with land managers throughout the community, both county, city, and state. We also annually partner with Texas Parks and Wildlife to do the mountain biking exhibit, which we lead about 800 kids along the trails of the Kenny Falls State Park. And we believe that Texas Parks and Wildlife has an opportunity to put Texas on the map as a mountain biking destination similar to Colorado or Arkansas. In general, the Texas Parks trail system is great for beginners, but of the 54 mountain bike trails listed on the Parks and Wildlife website, only about 10 of those are rated for experienced users and greater than 6 miles. We would like Texas Parks and Wildlife to consider increasing access for mountain bikes in state parks in general, increasing the number of mountain bike trails, increasing the mileage on existing trails in parks with less than 10 miles currently, and add more trails for experienced riders at experience levels 3 and 4. And we have some very fine examples in Texas. Some of those that come to mind are Government Canyon near San Antonio, San Angelo State Park, Tyler State Park, and Palo Duro Canyon. We would also like to recommend continued partnership with local mountain bike clubs and organizations such as the Austin Ridge Riders, Dorva in Dallas, and Greater Houston Area Mountain Bike Club, as well as Storm in San Antonio, to help evaluate, build, and design these trails. For the local Austin area, we have some specific recommendations due to the increasing population in the area. Some of the city trails are really becoming very crowded, and I'm almost out of time. So we're specifically recommending some expansion and development of Bastrop and Busher, Pernellis Falls, and McKinney Falls, and near the Austin area, Inks Lake, Lost Maples, and Garner State Park. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Quick comment. We had a presentation this morning on building franchises and recreational business. I just wonder if Scott, the appropriate person who's going to take on the biking project, will make sure to meet and tell them what we're up to and get their help. We need your help.
Good point. Janice Hansen. Am I pronouncing that right?
You're coming real close.
Oh, it's good. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, sure. Members of the Commission. I'm Janice Hansen. I'm the director of Texas Conservation Alliance, the state affiliate of the National Wildlife Federation. I'm always excited when it's time for the annual meeting because it gives me a chance to come and tell you how much we appreciate the work that y'all are doing and the service y'all are giving to the state of Texas. The big news, of course, coming out of the legislature was the state park funding, and without your leadership, it wouldn't have happened. We're very, very grateful for that. We particularly want to thank you for the passing new rules concerning non-game restrictions on the take of non-game back in May. That was a very, very important, rather a watershed step for Parks and Wildlife. We're hoping you'll take it further. We appreciated that you're continuing to look at the issue because we think there should be a complete ban on turtles, on collecting of turtles. But we really, really appreciate the progress that has been made. Bob Cook, I've heard him say several times that he thinks the three most important conservation issues that are coming up for Texas are water, water, and water. And I was delighted to see that y'all understand this. I've just been looking at the Parks and Wildlife magazine where you've made the state of lakes and the situations surrounding water a major, major issue. We appreciate this very much. There were two points made in the magazine that don't get made often enough. The first one does get quite a bit of lip service that we're not conserving enough, but the point that isn't made often enough is that there's an awful lot of water developed in reservoirs that's not being used, and that we need to be making, and we feel strongly that we need to be using that water first. I can't stand up here without saying something about Bob Cook, because I sure tell he's leaving us.
Careful.
I don't have to tell y'all that Bob is one of the most competent managers in public life in Texas. He hires good people, he stands behind his people, and he's an outstanding spokesman for conservation and for wildlife and habitat in this state. And I just want to say give our public kudos and say that we really appreciate what you've done and we hate to see you leave. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Janice. Any questions or comments from Janice? Bob, you don't have any more.
I was going to give her more time.
I'll just call one more. That was the Janice on our last speaker, Thomas Hall. Okay, because he put his sheet in, but I'm sorry. He left. Okay, I guess with that, I've got to go back to my script.
I mean, that's it.
Yeah. Bob, see, you're leaving on a high note here. He didn't create a lot of controversy. We appreciate that.
Up,
yes. Yeah, yeah. Mr. Cook, is there any other business to come before this commission?
No, sir.
Okay, I declare us adjourned. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody.